You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you need when what you really want inside can only come. people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease. Get some people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything was well for you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope that weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and it must be done, it has to get done, then it will get done because you will make sure that it does get done. And that's why we love you. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. to 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. The shortcut, any search engine that you use, Google, you know, whatever, and put in the search, Baba Oshi, BABAOSHI.net, BabaOshi.net, and there will get, there once again will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening, excuse me, other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, on Mondays, from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with Dr. Kamal Kamban, Dr. Mawia Kamban, and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9 p.m., the Sankofa Elders Council. And on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Brother Vamani Tahima has been taking our people to the motherland for many years, over 500. That's right. I think it started in 06. Africa for the Africans. Yes. And I'm asking you to go to the website, Africa for the Africans, and check it out for yourself. His upcoming trip to Ghana, May 24th to June 5th. And that's $3,800. Then November 17th through the 28th to Tanzania, $3,800. And then Ghana, December 24th to January 5th, $4,000. And the trip to Senegal and Gambia, which was rescheduled for March 31st to April 10th, 2023, is still only $3,800. And of course, on the website, you'll learn more about the land that is for sale, the investment of the Black Star Repatriation and Pan-African community. in Ghana, and a number of things that you can take advantage of. But everything you need is right there. But brothers and sisters, if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007 and give my brother Bomani Tayemba a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. Africa for the Africans.org. Habesha Incorporated.org. Brothers and sisters, they are doing the work of HabeshaIncorporated.org. Go to their website. Check it out. They're seeking donations to continue with the Kashi Project in Ghana. And they look to have the international launch October 8th to the 17th in Ghana, West Africa. So go to the website, Habeshaincorporated.org, and see for yourself the great work that they're doing. And they definitely deserve to be supported. Ledge Group.com. Brothers, LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development Group Economics. You know, they work in the three areas of human existence that are so vitally necessary, which is food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects in 6 countries. They have over 170 people employed and over 260 members. Become a member of the LEDGE Group. TheLEDGEGroup.com. Abibiatumi.com. Brothers and sisters, let that be the site that you go to when you want to shop, when you want information. Brothers and sisters, you can learn a language. You can learn Ifa Khan, Medu Netcher. That's right, the Medu Netcher, Kiswahili. I've often said that we need to learn a language, particularly Kiswahili, because in that way we can communicate with each other. That's right. Abibiatumi.com. Abibiatumi. Abibiatumi.com. Smai Pharmacy. Smai Pharmacy. SMAIFARMACY. Smai Pharmacy, brothers and sisters. Go to smaipharmacy.com and give Brother Jabril a call. Give Brother Jabril a call at 731-327-6929. That's 731-327-6229. And you also can email him at smaipharmacy@gmail.com. That's smaipharmacy@gmail.com. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta, right on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard, right across the street from Soul Vegetarian, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. And they have delicious smoothies and fruit drinks and pastries and bean pie and all kind of drinks, all kind of good stuff. And on weekends, it's a healthy market, so they have all kinds of good stuff. On weekends, they serve vegan food on Saturday and Sunday at a reasonable price. Give them a call at 404-444-1635. That's 444-444-1635. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Mama Nia at the Medu Bookstore, located in the Greenbrier Mall, if you are in that area. Stop by. Stop by Mama Nia's, the Medu Bookstore, or give her a call, because if you're looking for a book, she may have it already, but if she doesn't, she'll get it for you. I got to stop by there because my good brother, the name book is in. And for my good brother, Irv Lewis in B. Moore, got to pick that up for him, my good brother. 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. She has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, gift certificates, T-shirts, and all kind of good stuff at the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother Gazimde Ajamu. Check him out. He has a coffee bar serving delicious Cameroon boyo. all kinds of good stuff. So give my brother a call at 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. There is light in the black dot. Athletics has their their store in the new Black Street, Black Wall Street Market, the new Black Wall Street Market, located in Stonecrest, right off of right off the interstate of I-20, exiting at Turner Hill Road. If you're going east, because they're east of Atlanta, so if you're going east from on I-20 and you exit Turner Hill Road, make that right, go down to three lights, make a right at the third, and on the left will be the new Black Wall Street Market. Check it out. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us, their Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night. The number to call if you want to listen, or just, well, if you want to check them out on the computer, just go to blogtalkradio.com, blogtalkradio.com/ULU, Us Lifting Us. If you want to give a question, comment, or concern, dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789 from 9 to 10 on Thursday nights. That Thursday night broadcast from 9 to 10. Us Lifting Us. Homeland Village. Homeland Village is closed on Mondays, but they're open from Tuesday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. in Macon, Georgia. 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia. Give my good brother Abijah a call at 478-256-1166. 478-256-1166. It's a bookstore. It's a furniture store. It's a clothing store. They got vegan food. They have a restaurant in there serving vegan food. It's a one-stop. That's a one-stop shop for sure. Speaking of a one-stop shop, Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop, located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, Booth 225. For more information, give our great sister, Shelly Amundset, a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. And sanjay-haiti.org. Sister Gabrielle really is doing great work with our young brothers and sisters in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Sun Goddess Scents. Brothers and sisters, go to Sun Goddess, go to Sanjay-Haiti. Sanjay, SONJE-AYITI.org. Sanjay-Haiti. You be looking at one thing, don't do something else. Akaban Institute. Brothers and sisters, Baba Baruti and Mama Inia are doing outstanding work with our young worthy Asafo. They deserve to be supported. Brothers and sisters, make your check or money order out to Akaban Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But you can do what I have done because I've used Cash App. So I send them money every month on Cash App. The dollar sign, Yah. YAA, the letter M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. They're just great people, man. Also, too, you can get the books that they have for sale. Go to AkabanHouse.com. AkabanHouse.com for the great books that Baba Baruti produces. He's a prolific writer. And I tell you, it's worth it. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. February 20th. Powerful people never educate the victims of their power and how to take their power away from them. The ideology of our former captives cannot save us. Let me repeat. The ideology of our former captives, our captors, the ideology of our former captors cannot save us. We will not be truly liberated until we are the main instruments of our liberation. We will not be truly liberated until we are the main instruments of our liberation. Yes, that's right. It's Dr. John Henry Clark. The vanquished are in no position to proclaim that they will end the bloodshed by ceasing or working to cease all violence. They have already been pacified. The most that they can do is work toward disarming those other African Europeans who seek to destroy so as to make the European road of destruction easier for them. Only an equal empowered to force this resolution at the international level can authoritarily make such a declaration. Only one in a position to be victorious can proclaim pursuit of absolute peace and have others believe that it is of his or her own ideological violation. True lasting negotiation requires equals, and even in peace, the maintenance of that equality. Even though they have claimed this has their divine mission, Negroes and lost souls have no power to declare an African peace with Europeans or anybody else for that matter. This is a decision only those who have not returned from their ancestors. We can make and steal only from the seat of power. This decision only those who have not turned from their ancestors. We can make and steal only from the seat of power. I am a main instrument of our liberation. You know, since I got these two Inye Say Sims, man, I don't mean maybe coming out with another. I hope so. I bounce back and forth. I choose from which days that I feel that the messages, or I might read like I did the other day. I read four of them because the message is so powerful. But this one is kind of special because it's a quote from Nana Hoche. And Nana Hoche's wife, Nana Hoche, gave me my name at an African naming ceremony. So this is very special. And Nana Hoche they were living, of course, in Milwaukee, and then they moved here to Atlanta, and then he made his transition. He was great in Ifa, the Ifa religion. I have been studying African theology and cultures for over 60 years. In all of that time, I have never seen where homosexuality was condoned or promoted in any way. African spirituality in general, and Ifa in particular, promotes the relationships between men and women and the procreation of life through them. Procreation through male and female relationships is the conduit by which the ancestors return. Nana Hoche. If you ask why confused Africans do what they do, know the answer is simple. The truth is never complicated, except for determined liars. Homosexuals, promosexuals, and like confusion have no other primary mission in life other than to disrupt and corrupt any and everything that is African and natural. They do what they do because they are caught up in a rapture of whiteness, of Caucasianness. They are afflicted with the Yorugu virus. The intensity of their self-hatred is so deep in them that all they want to do is disappear into Yorugu in any and every way they can. They serve their captors and believe in his or her supremacy. Wittingly or not, they are agents, soldiers whose sole mission is to assist in the genocidal removal of African thought, spirit, action, anything which, through its very presence, reveals Yorugu for the degeneracy it naturally is, and its genocidal intent toward African people. For these agents, a Yoruguan order, disorder, the thought of being seen as anything remotely African is so terrifying to them that they would prefer spiritual suicide than to be identified in this way. Stay on guard. Don't let Yorugu's eunuchs in. Affirm. As my ancestors, I am heterosexual. Ashe. And you see that confusion is global. Because what the European has done is global. You know? What he has done is global. I'm very happy today that I have with me as my guest, Brother Muhammad Abdullah. We're going to talk today. Today is the 21st of February, and of course the 21st of February, in my mind, especially for the last, I don't know, 30, 40 years, it's a significant day. I know I have two good friends whose birthday it is today, and wishing them both happy birthday. My good friend Jim Wimbush and my ex-wife, Shirley Franklin. They have a birthday today. But the day is the day that Malcolm X was assassinated. I don't know about you, but I remember it's another of those days like Dr. King's assassination, John F. Kennedy's assassination, 9/11, any of those days that you can remember and you can recall exactly what was happening with you and what you were doing at the time that you heard that information. And for Malcolm X, I had been, following Muhammad Ali. And then when he found out he was of the Nation of Islam, you know, just to even read something on, I even got the Muhammad Speaks newspaper just to, you know, see what was happening. And became aware of Malik El-Shabazz, Brother Omar Wali, Malcolm Little, Malcolm X. And when he was killed in the Audubon Ballroom, I was riding in the car with my auntie, who was driving, because my mother didn't drive, with my mother. And on the radio, they said that Malcolm X had been assassinated or killed or murdered or whatever in New York City in the Audubon Ballroom on that day. And around that time, I think it was like, late evening, like right before, dusk. Right before dusk, if I can remember correctly. But it stayed with me. And of course, years later, Malcolm X's autobiography comes out with the assistance of Alex Haley. And it was almost like a must read for many of our people. I mean, especially those who seeked the radical difference. It wasn't a must read. It wasn't a must read for those who were loving Martin Luther King or loving integration, because Malcolm was raw. And I guess for me, I've always gravitated to the raw. That's why I like the Panthers, That's why I am the way I am, because instinctively I like the raw. I like the challenge. And like I said, I loved Muhammad Ali, but I really loved Muhammad Ali when he became a member of the Nation and was talking back to white folks in such a way like, ooh, you don't talk to white folks like that. But that was Malcolm. That was Malcolm. Well, my guest today is Brother Muhammad Abdullah, my dear friend, good brother. We've known each other since we were young people. So, Brother Muhammad, good morning.
Good morning, Oshi. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you well, dear brother. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And yeah, unfortunately for me, when Malik Shabazz was assassinated, I was 14 years old and innocent as a virgin. I didn't know anything about any of that. I probably had seen people in the Nation of Islam in Milwaukee. I didn't have anything to distinguish them with, so I didn't really become acquainted or aware of who Malik Shabazz, Muhammad Ali, the Nation, and all that until I was incarcerated at a boys' school when I was 17. And it was such a shocking and traumatic experience for me, losing my freedom, that I gravitated towards. I don't recall really a single book I have read. I'm sure I read, the typical elementary and the different books that we were presented in school, but in school I was like a fish out of water. So Once I became aware of who he was, I was never the same. Transformative.
Yes. Yes, I agree. So as you're speaking, I'm thinking the same thing here. You know, one of the first books I read was Soul on Ice, Eldridge Cleaver's book, you know. And a lot of it, I don't even remember. But I remember when I read Malcolm's autobiography and gravitated to, as I stated earlier, you know, to the more radical side of things, you know. Because, I mean, I had participated in open housing marches, you know, marched across the 16th Street Viaduct that one night when they pelter us with bottles and rocks and bricks and so forth. And then that last big march for me was Wisconsin Avenue, when it seemed like there was literally thousands of us marching across, marching down Wisconsin Avenue for open housing, you know, and then the NAACP Youth Council, and then the Panthers and their breakfast program and so forth. So I had an awakening of radical thought and opinion, more so than, you know, the integration and so forth. And that's why I guess I am the way that I am, because it's something instilled in me. In fact, my greatest transformation happened when Virginia Grant Stamper. Virginia Grant Stamper had a program called Learn Power, where they were in a particular neighborhood on 2nd and Garfield. There's a church across the street from Mount Zion, an old Lutheran church. And then there's a house behind that right by the alley, and that's where we had the program at, and even in the church basement, you know, during the summer. And I worked in there for about a year, and I learned so much. I didn't know the Black National Anthem. I didn't know Marcus Garvey. I didn't know so many things and so many people and great things that we had done. And that exposed me to that, you know. So that was, you know, very important for me in my awakening.
Well, the interesting thing for me was having read the autobiography and becoming a staunch Malcolmite. I mean, the impression that he was just so impressionable that I then, when I was 20 years old, there was so much going on. It was almost overwhelming, the forces of the Vietnam War and the civil rights marches and the freedom rides and the Black Panther Party, and there was just so much at that time. But at the age of 20, I made the decision was made for me, to enter the Nation of Islam. And at the time when I entered the Nation of Islam in February 1971, the heat of the split and the Malcolm's assassination and the division and, within the Nation of Islam, you could feel it, but you never heard his, no one ever said his name. You just knew. You did not speak of Malcolm, and so for 5 years as a member of the Nation of Islam, you just had to almost have a double consciousness, to borrow a phrase from Dr. Du Bois, where even if you thought about Malcolm, you didn't say anything. I'll never forget. Right after I joined the Nation of Islam, or the same day, I was hired as a teacher's aide for a middle school, Parkland Middle School, which was a majority African-American school. Most of the teachers were African-American. The principal was African-American.
It just opened, didn't it? It just
I'm sorry?
It said it would. It just opened. Yeah, it just opened up. Brand new building.
I had attended Keith Avenue Elementary School
right next door
to the eighth grade, and it there was no middle school at that time. And after I graduated and was going to Rufus King, at some point they built Parkland.
Right.
But when the summertime came, there was no, you were just out of a job. And so I remember going to Chicago. I had seen in the Muhammad Speaks newspaper an ad to go to this place in Chicago on the north side called Kazi Import. Kazi was a Pakistani brother who was a Sunni Muslim, a Sufi Sunni Muslim, I later learned. And he would advertise in the Muhammad Speaks newspaper. He had a relationship with Elijah Muhammad and some of the officials of the Nation of Islam. And I answered this ad, and I was selling merchandise. And one of the things I bought in his store was what was called a Jinnah cap. It's a cap that's made in Pakistan. Sometimes they would be made of lamb or something that appeared to be lamb. And I remember wearing it. And the captain of the temple in Milwaukee told me, you can't wear that.
That's the same hat that Malcolm used to wear.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a type of hat that Malcolm wore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know that I thought about Malcolm when I bought it, but immediately, you know, no, you can't wear that. And so that was how polarizing Malcolm still, you know, was within the Nation of Islam. So for me, and then it wasn't until after Elijah Muhammad died in 1975 and his son, Warith Deen Muhammad, W.D. Muhammad, inherited the leadership and talked about his relationship with Malcolm. If you recall, and you know, I watched I was up quite late watching a number of things on YouTube, documentaries about Malcolm. And he mentioned that, you know, the controversy with respect to him speaking publicly about these children that Elijah Muhammad had by these young secretaries. And he said that when W.D. Muhammad was released from prison from Sandstone Federal Correctional Facility in Minnesota, that he told him, that confirmed that he knew about these outside relationships. They've since cleaned them up, or how do they say it, reinvented history. And sometimes you'll hear Farrakhan or some members of the Nation refer to these women or some of them as his wives. For example, the minister in Chicago, Minister Ishmael Muhammad, his mother, Tynetta Dinar,
she was very prominent. She was a very prominent woman in the Nation of Islam, Sister Tanya.
Not when I was a member.
Okay.
She didn't surface as with this prominence that you speak of until Farrakhan
resurrected
the Nation in 1978. Mm-hmm. But before that, to know who she was, she was around in the early years, and then you didn't hear anything about her. To know who she was, you would have had to get some very early. But she was one of the women who had children by him. I don't know how old she was at the time, but she was one of those women. And so that particular period where we were sort of open to receiving Malcolm or reconnecting ourselves with Malcolm. And one of the things that, you and I have spoken about, the brother Muhammad, Abdulrahman Muhammad's expose on who killed Malcolm. And there was a subsequent ABC piece about the brothers who were exonerated, who had spent 20 years in prison. And one of the things that jolted me about revisiting that history, and some of that history, I'll be honest, I'd never really heard connected like that. I'd heard information about the individuals who were at the Audubon Ballroom firing weapons that day, that those individuals came out of the temple in Newark, but you know, you didn't know their names, you didn't know their faces. That brother bringing the faces to light, or those names to light, in his expose was something. I probably have watched that 9 times.
Well, I watched it about 3, because it's that deep. And I think that each time I watch it, I get more information. I get more information. And just like you and many other, hopefully, brothers and sisters want to know the truth, you know. And even though, and I often say, and I will continue to say, the death of Martin Luther King, the death of Malcolm X is a result of the government of these United States. And the Nation of Islam helped make that happen, helped the atmosphere to make that happen. When you see the cats from Newark, and one of the telling pieces in Who Killed Malcolm X was when he exposed the gunman, you know, the brother with the trench coat, the brother with the shotgun, you know, and then was going to go to him and confront him. But by the time that he was going to do that, the brother had made his transition.
Right.
You know, but he was definitely going to do that. And then he has a sit down, if you can remember. Of course you can, because you've seen it that many times, with the brothers from Newark. The brothers from the Newark Mosque, who knew that this man had done this. You know?
Yeah. With respect to the assassination and the degree of complicity with respect to the government, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, if you were in law enforcement, or you were in government, or even a Caucasian person, you would expect that you know. I don't know anybody, if you knew anything about J. Edgar Hoover, and we didn't. A lot of us didn't during that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do. A lot of us do now, don't we?
Yeah. Well, we've come to know about him now with, you know, the terms of, you know, when COINTELPRO was exposed, probably in the 70s, mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
It came out that there was this, or Boston, New York, the Bureau of Police Special Services or something, whatever. That doesn't surprise you. Similarly, it doesn't surprise you that some individuals of you, me as a member of in the Nation of Islam, And you know, going back and looking, examining my own life during that time, and the level of consciousness or lack of consciousness in some respect, and devotion that you had to have towards Elijah Muhammad, his name, his family, any of that. I mean, they were called the royal family. If you went to the Detroit Temple Number One, the first Nation of Islam temple in America, in Detroit, when his family came in, it would get back. The royal family is coming through. Mm. They had different colored FOI uniforms. Everybody else was blue. Theirs was white. So you knew that you almost had to have this affinity for them, this love for them, or otherwise you weren't a believer. You weren't a true member. So having gone through that, and then come out of it, it's amazing to see how blind allegiance can be. But I think the other thing, like what you just mentioned, that I was taken aback is to see the level of commitment to the fact that, you know, like when you would hear this brother, Abdurrahman Muhammad, ask about this brother, William Bradley, I think his name was, the shotgun man.
Right.
Leave it alone, brother. Leave it alone, brother.
Mm-hmm.
And they still can hold on to that this man was deserving of death because he said something about Elijah Muhammad that was true.
Mm-hmm.
It would be different if he made up something.
Right, exactly.
What he said about it was true.
Right.
And later on, after Elijah Muhammad died, those 15 children that he had outside.
15?
Yeah, he had 15 wow. children outside the marriage he had to Clara Muhammad, his mm-hmm. wife. His wife, who during the time that Elijah Muhammad and many of the men in the Nation of Islam were arrested for not registering for the draft, charged with sedition for encouraging individuals to not join the army or speaking against the government, whatever the charges were, Clara Muhammad and the women in the nation were the ones who held it together. They supported the men when they were locked up. Because in the Nation of Islam, when I became a member in 1971, at the age of 20, you did not go to the military. If you were drafted, you went to jail. That was without question. Mm-hmm. If you went to the military back then, you were a pariah. You were out. You would not be accepted in the nation as some individuals. I know individuals who followed Farrakhan when he revived the nation who were in Desert Storm.
Mm-hmm.
No, you didn't do that back then. So to see these brothers in Newark, two things struck me deepest. One, that they knew that these individuals
were innocent,
were still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Five individuals who had, you know, fired weapons that were part of the team of individuals. And granted, it should be no surprise to anyone that the police decided, well, you know what? We are, they get ready to go down. And they said they asked Malcolm. I saw the interview at Betty Shabazz. And asked, you know, he said, no, I don't want no security that day. That was cool. Okay, cool. They kind of just stood back. But those five individuals that fired those weapons that day, minus the one that got caught on the scene.
Right, tell me.
Those other four individuals could live in Newark all these years
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they'd never come out or come to the surface. Or what's worse to me, that Elijah Muhammad all the way down the ranks knew that those two brothers
were innocent.
Muhammad Abdulaziz and mm-hmm. the other brother,
Islam
mm-hmm. were totally innocent.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did they not fight to get those brothers released and exonerated or put up a defense, they didn't support them or their families while they were locked up. That, to me,
it's egregious.
I just cannot wrap my mind around, because I knew of instances where the nation, I think I've recounted to you an instance about this brother named Brother Hugh X, who ended up in Milwaukee, but had killed a deputy sheriff in Cordele, Georgia, around 1972 or 73. And he was selling Muhammad Speak newspaper, him and some other brothers, and the sheriff arrested him, was going to take him out behind a Clark gas station. He ended up getting the gun from the sheriff, shot him, freed himself from the handcuffs and escaped and made it all the way up to Milwaukee. When he was arrested, Elijah Muhammad sent $125,000 cash for his bail. That's how we came to know him. And he lived in Milwaukee in our community until he eventually was extradited back to Georgia and hired the top criminal lawyer in Milwaukee at the time, James Shello, to represent him.
Mm. Mm.
They gave none of that kind of support to either one of those two brothers. That blew me away.
And they languished in prison for over 20 years.
20 innocent. Years.
Because even Talmadge Hare, who confessed, and I saw this many, many years ago on Tony Brown's Journal.
Absolutely.
He said, these cats did not do this. They were
right.
not there. You know? He was insistent.
And there's another interview with a brother who has also since passed away, but he was like Malcolm's assistant in the Muslim Mosque Incorporated, the Organization mm-hmm. of African Unity. He gave an interview where he said neither of those two brothers, Muhammad Abdulaziz and Brother Islam, they would not have even set foot inside that building. And everybody, you can see pictures in Muhammad Abdulaziz's expose of Muhammad Abdulaziz on duty in Harlem on 125th and Lenox.
Mm-hmm. And mouse number seven? Yeah. Mouse number seven?
Yeah. So so clearly they would have known them, both of those brothers. It'd be like me trying to go in something after I was put out of the Nation in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
No, you ain't coming in here. So that, you know, but it's one thing that was all piecemeal over the years. Mm-hmm. But until Muhammad Abdulaziz put that expose together and did that research and connected those dots, no one I know could have seen it any clearly unless you know, worked for the FBI, and which was at the top, knew all of this was going on because they were fomenting this rift between Malcolm and Elijah Muhammad for the reasons that they infiltrated and subverted all of the organizations that they could.
Sure.
Dr. King, name me an organization, civil rights or black nationalists, that didn't have infiltrators back then.
There is none.
They were all infiltrators.
Yeah, all of them. I remember watching the piece on the Black Panthers, and this fine sister, beautiful fro, she infiltrates. She's talking about how she got close enough. You know, aside from what you've seen, the Judas piece on Fred Hampton, what that cat was able to do. And she talked about, and she was on this program. She talked about how she got into the inner circle, you know, of the Panthers in Oakland and so forth. And I'm saying, you know, we're willing. I just read Brother Muhammad, each program, the Inye Sesin, which is an African thing, which is a daily revolutionary thought. And I read that, and it's each day there's a saying, a quote by an individual in our history or who presently, and then Brother Baba Mwalimu Baruti writes a narrative, you know. And I just talked about how some of us are so willingly wanting to support the Caucasian because we're just so weak, and how detrimental it is to us, you know, that we're willing to do so to fragment or even destroy the organizations that we have, you know. And so now, at this very moment, I would never be a member of the Black Lives Matter movement. That organization is not infiltrated. It's supported strictly by, you know, organizations outside of us. And, of course, the promotion of homosexuality is an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I read a piece a while back when I was in Madison about the origin of the Black Lives Matter movement. The creed, their credo is basically anti-male.
Anti-male, it is. When I went to their website and I read, I was like, damn, how can we can't support this. We can't support this. You know, they're denigrating men, you know? And the leadership was lesbians. No, we can't support this because, let me just read this right quick.
Constantly adding, they had a young lady who was on ABC's The View this morning. She was one of the first guests out. And initially they were presenting her as this young Afro-Latina who is, I guess she's playing in the role that Rita Moreno played in
West Side Story.
And she's not sitting down 5 minutes before she's not only Afro-Latina, but she's LGBTQY+, whatever. I was like, what?
Yeah, I know, man. I'm like, damn.
So, you know, one of the things that we'll get back to Malik Shabazz because today, 56 years after he was assassinated.
Let me do one thing. Let me read this piece right quick. Then we're gonna Then we're gonna go to a break. I didn't get to Gene Carn Karn piece, I got the old piece that we did with the eulogy by Ozzie Davis and the piece by theme from Malcolm with Donald Byrd. Okay. So here's the piece. I just read this earlier, but this is Manahochi. Manahochi, spiritual leader, Ifa, was living in Milwaukee, and his wife gave me my name at a naming ceremony. You know, she said, I see the work that you do in the community. I have a good name for you. And, of course, I embraced the name and had it changed. But he said this, and this is very deep. He said, I have been studying African theology, African religions and spirituality and cultures for over 60 years. All of that time, I have never seen where homosexuality was condoned or promoted in any way. African spirituality in general, and Ifa in particular, promotes relationships between men and women and the procreation of life through them. Procreation through male and female relationships is the conduit by which the ancestors return. So, you know, that's necessary for us to... Yes, go ahead.
I'm looking at my bookshelf. I don't have all my books. Won't even fit into my little apartment I moved. So, but I reserved four shelves for, you know, my favorite subjects, and one of them is reserved for. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I probably have 10 books dealing with the history of Malik Shabazz Malcolm, and one of them that I have there just primarily for reference purposes, but that I want to take, you know, on the subject you were just talking about and reject, is the suggestion by this guy Manning Marable.
Yeah,
that Malcolm engaged in you know, some kind of homosexuality when he was incarcerated. First of all, I've been incarcerated before, and it is not a pleasant experience. But you can lock me up for 900 years, and when you come back at any point in time, you are not going to find that Muhammad Abdullah engaged in a homosexual act. And when you look at Malcolm the person, I think one of the most telling things about the character and the strength of Malik Shabazz Malcolm is the FBI came to...
That's right. I always tell us. That's right. Go ahead, brother. That's right.
To recruit him.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the way he handled that, mm-hmm. and the way he handled his entire life, as his wife Betty Shabazz said on one of the documentaries I saw last night, this brother was... Who you saw, that's who he was.
That's right.
And he was not an individual. One of the things they learned that they didn't know before, but by the time they got through, two things you can't get to this brother with is women, sex, and money.
Yep.
It just did not interest him.
Mm-hmm.
His constitution towards the liberation of African people was so... If it wasn't pure, if it wasn't perfect, it was as close to self-actualization
That's
as
right.
a human being could achieve.
Ashe, beautifully spoken, Brother Muhammad. From that point, we're going to take a break and we'll come back. We'll open up the phone lines. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com. And blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You're listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Well, welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com, a theme for Malcolm, Donald Byrd. We're not going to do the announcements. We're going to go right back to discussion. I want to get more information. There's a number of people who are on the queue, so you know if you want to ask a question or you have a comment or concern, please hit star twice. Yes.
So I'm gonna throw one thing out there to answer a question that I posed yesterday when I was posting this, and that the question is: were Elijah Muhammad or Louis Farrakhan complicit in Malcolm's assassination? In other words, did they have direct involvement with dispatching those five individuals to the Audubon Ballroom from Newark, New Jersey? One thing we know about Louis Farrakhan is that he, on the night that this happened, Minister Farrakhan was the minister. He had replaced Malcolm as minister of Temple Number 7 in Harlem. That night, he was not in Harlem, he was in Newark. And the minister from Newark, James Shabazz, who hated Malcolm, I don't know who hated him more, between him, Elijah Muhammad Jr., and Captain Joseph. We've heard Malcolm, we've heard Minister Farrakhan over the years. I'm sure you've seen the recording of the lecture where he said, was he our hypocrite or was he yours? And did you dealt with him like you deal with him? Mm-hmm. Then you go a little bit forward to the interview with Mike Wallace and Malcolm's daughter,
right,
eldest daughter, wherein he's talking about he carried a picture of Malcolm around, what, to throw darts at? Because clearly, but even by the time I came, like I said, the hatred and the vitriol for Malcolm, if his name came up in the nation, when I came a member 5 years after he was assassinated, was so strong. No, nothing like that ever happened. And lastly, in the expose, you hear Muhammad Ali's ex-wife, Khalilah, and a number of individuals say that Elijah Muhammad, if there is a piece of film, or recording of Elijah Muhammad telling people to leave Malcolm alone and don't do anything to him, put it in front of me and I'll eat it up without a drink of water. that never happened. Mm-hmm. The Muhammad Speaks newspapers, the ministers, everybody, Elijah Muhammad Jr. went to New York. All the fruit that were available, FOI that was available, were asked to come to New York, and he said that Malcolm's tongue should have been delivered to Elijah Muhammad, his father, on a platter by now. All you had to do in an organization like the Nation or almost any cult, let the leader or somebody at the top say that. somebody's going to carry it out.
Mm-hmm. And all finally, they got to do is say
it. They asked Warf D. Muhammad when he became the leader, was your father complicit in the assassination of Malcolm? He said, not by act, mm-hmm. but by omission.
Mm-hmm.
In other words,
right, his
he
words.
Didn't order it. He didn't order it, but he spoke in words that pretty much
right.
opened up the door for anybody who wanted to take on the job mm-hmm. when it happened.
And so the direction was not, you know, saying it. I ordered you and the Newark Moss to come together to kill this man. No. It was basically, once again, the atmosphere was created by the Nation of Islam for it to happen. And you heard many of the members of the nation in the East Coast at that time saying what Malcolm did was worthy of death.
Yeah,
Farrakhan himself.
It was fanned from the top. And the only thing surprising about the fact that they came out of Newark is that they didn't come out of Philadelphia.
No, those Philadelphia was gangster as hell, weren't they? Cats was real gangsters.
Just get a hold of the book, Black Brothers Inc.
Black Brothers Inc.
And you will say to yourself, "Wow, I'm surprised the brothers in Philly didn't beat the brothers in Newark to this."
Yeah, them cats in Philly, man. Yeah. If anybody wants to join this conversation, hit star twice. We're talking today with Brother Muhammad Abdullah. And we're talking about today is the day that Malcolm was murdered. Malcolm was assassinated in the Audubon Ballroom on a Sunday afternoon. And for those of us who developed an affection for Malcolm can really remember what went down. So if anybody wants to get in this, 404 Research West, good afternoon.
Hey, Oshi, my brother.
How you doing?
Good presentation, man.
Yes,
good
sir.
Good presentation, man. So now I look at the algorithm of the scenario with my brother, all my brothers, man. Here we go. Going against each other, man. Okay? But if them brothers were so goddamn bad, excuse me, I'm sorry, man. It's so bad in Philly and Newark. How many white men they killed, man? Okay, so that's a bunch of BS. We can go at our own folk, that meritorious manumission, man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these cats so big and bad, bro. At least I like the story about my man in Cardale, Georgia. He handled his business. I love that, man. Bro, this meritorious manumission is killing me, man.
Yeah.
Between that, black on black, sell out. That's why whatever I do, Oshi, I do it alone, man. Stuff mm-hmm. I did back in the 80s. When I was making some money off Sidewalk Pharmaceuticals, I did it on my own.
Yeah.
And what I did was, the garbage they tried to serve in the black community, you know what I did? I moved to the white community on the beach and served that. I just used the black ones to get me the white customers. And then once I had a white clientele, giving the garbage to them, I told the black ones I ain't had no money. I mean, they ain't had nothing, no product.
Mm-hmm.
But like I text you earlier, man, I'm ready to get out of here, man.
Between yeah, I hear you.
Meritorious manumission, right. Negroes selling each other out.
Yeah.
And then we going through with the white vote, bro.
Well, it ain't going to get no better, Brother Wes. It's not going to get any better. Believe me.
Brother told me to try to stay here and keep fighting for the people. But damn, bro, I got to get out of here somewhere. I mean, I was fighting you. And a lot of other brothers about leaving. You and Carl Nelson about leaving.
Yeah.
But now.
You understand
what
why.
I saw Friday, man.
Yeah.
After what I saw Friday, when that police lady killed that brother, only got 14 months, man.
Yeah. And she's probably only going to do, she's probably only going to do 6 or 7 months of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, man. But hey,
And then she'll get a job with another police department.
More likely.
All right, Brother Wes.
One more
thing. Sure, go ahead.
Tomorrow, one of the police, Blue Klux Klan that was on the Breonna Taylor raid, it's trial coming up tomorrow, man, on the court TV. So y'all watch what kind of buffoonery and chicanery and go on with that. But I want to thank my brother from the nation there, spilling what's going on, man. And all it is, I study the algorithm and whatever somebody did. I learned from their mistake. That's
smart
genius. Wise man learned from his own mistake, but a genius learned from mistakes of others. And so keep doing what you're doing.
Right on.
Trying to round up these Negroes and reprogram and deprogram them. Because I told you that black people be acting like a damn herd of cats, man. It's BS.
Yeah, I hear you,
but
Wes.
But anyway, man.
All right, dear brother.
I'll catch you on the next episode.
All right, my brother.
Continue.
Peace to you.
Come on, don't take. Come on, don't take. Continue.
Well, listen, you continue to listen. If you want to jump back in, you know what to do. All right, brother Wes.
Peace. Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Research Wes. 323-323. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're listening to African Perspectives.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Thank you for taking my call. Listen, my name is Tamori, and I'm 45 years old, right? And I've been studying Malcolm's history for the past 15 or so years. And what I don't understand is that why is it that the people back then who are now, who, because Malcolm was assassinated, what is it, 56, 67 years ago now?
Yeah.
Okay, why is it that the people back then who are now, I guess they are now 75, 80,
right,
why didn't they carry on Malcolm's, what do you call the Muslim Mosque Incorporated and the other organization that he was creating? Because I feel like Malcolm X was our Messiah. He was on point. And I've always said that had I been living back then, which I wasn't even born yet, in 1965, I would have joined Malcolm's organization. Because to me, the man was spot on. He was spot on in regards to trying to take the issue outside of the jurisdiction of the United States government.
That's right.
And take it into a world court organization to bring charges against the United States for violating not just the civil rights of the black people in this country, but for violating the human rights. And ever since then, no one has ever picked up the torch and carried it on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand.
Well, I tell you, I...
Wow, that's... Yeah.
Go ahead, Muhammad.
that's a question. I mean, let me say this, brother. You probably have some individuals who would say, and there's some others who would probably support them, that they did. It did carry on. However, it spells out different ways to different people. If you look inside what is called... quote-unquote, the Afrocentric community. They have an affinity for Malcolm, and they believe they've celebrated, they've tried to carry on his legacy. Then there are those who are Malcolm, transitioned from the Nation of Islam to Universal Islam, and some individuals feel, well, this is what Malcolm would have evolved to had he stayed here. That was one of the questions I wanted to throw out there is, who and what would Malcolm be today? And it depends on who you ask.
Right.
The question of him not taking our case before the United Nations, probably that might have been what got him killed. I mean, as much as him outing Elijah Muhammad's nefarious affairs with these young women, trying to take our situation towards on the world stage, that was something that I don't think J. Edgar Hoover and the federal government could avoid responding to.
Well, why is it that the people back then couldn't realize that they're allowing the same white man to use us one against the other by getting Malcolm killed? Because why couldn't Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam, why couldn't they squash their beef with Malcolm and just let work things out together? Like, I don't get, like I said, I'm 45, and I myself could see now Malcolm was right on a lot of issues, most of the issues.
In fact,
all the issues that Malcolm studied, Malcolm was right. Like, why is it that the people back then didn't get it? Why, I'm 45 years old, and I get it. I get what he was trying to do. And I've always said that had I been living back then, I would have fought against Martin Luther King and all of this integrationist foolishness. Because I feel Malcolm X was more spot on as far as what he was trying to do. You know, and I let a lot of old people have it, because I'm like, why is it that the people who are now 70 plus years old, why didn't you all get it? Because I let them have it. Whenever I speak to older folks, I tell them, I'm like, how come you guys didn't get it? Well, why? Like, why? Malcolm was, we had our Messiah right there.
Well, see, we didn't want that.
I think one of the things
Marcus Garvey's time, even the people back in Marcus Garvey's time, back in the 1920s, Marcus Garvey came and tried.
And Malcolm is a continuation of that. Go ahead, Brother Muhammad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was only going to say that I think Malcolm, had he survived, lived, and Martin Luther King, and the idea of a Messiah is a false. I don't think that you know what you need is you need the ideas and the objectives to filter down, or I don't want to use the word trickle, but it has to come down. You cannot have it where that was what you're speaking to is J. Edgar Hoover's primary objective, which was what? Prevent the rise of a black Messiah.
Correct.
And it's really a misnomer because there is no savior. Oshi and I yesterday were having a discussion and we were talking about, you said, why didn't Elijah Muhammad? Well, for one thing, when you step back from the Nation of Islam then and now, with all of its good intent, was really just something that was made up just like the rest of black religion in America. And it's difficult to build something onto something that sort of just put together, that starts with a weak foundation. The individual who started the Nation of Islam, as I told Oshi yesterday, was an individual who really did not bring Islam to black Americans. He brought Buddhism. The Nation of Islam is more Buddhist and Christian, black Christian, than it is anything related to Islam. So nothing that I can see from that foundation is going to come out of it, because it's the roots of the Nation of Islam is the Ahmadiyya movement that started in India.
And why did Farrakhan bring the Nation of Islam back? Because why didn't he just dismantle it? I mean, because what is
money.
Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam doing today? They just, what does Farrakhan do? Give speeches? I don't need speeches. Mm-hmm. I need action.
Money.
You know what I'm saying?
Does that sound familiar, Oshi?
Yeah.
That's what I was just saying to Oshi yesterday. I don't understand why people continue to try to give legitimacy to Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, because right. In all of his years of talking, you cannot point to one institution
exactly.
that he or Elijah Muhammad established that when they walk away, it's going to continue to run and benefit the majority or benefit
right.
African Americans.
Well, I must say,
he restarted the Nation of Islam because the attention it would draw to himself. That's what
exactly.
Farrakhan is about.
You see, what I liked about Malcolm, if there's any leader that I feel was genuine and sincere, Malcolm was genuine and sincere.
Ashe. Well,
absolutely.
I thank you. Thanks
absolutely
a lot, caller.
Correct.
Yes, sir. I thank you so much, caller. Stay with us. 602, good afternoon.
Yes, Brother Oshi. Good afternoon to your guests. Brother Marcus here. So, you know, after Marcus Garvey died in 1940, there was a brother by the name of Carlos Cooks.
Carlos Cooks, yes, sir.
That picked up the baton after Garvey. See, now a lot of people don't know about Carlos Cooks because Carlos Cooks avoided the media. He said we should get done with a program. Because as the brother just stated, when you have with charismatic leadership, all they have to do is get rid of the leader. And
that's
the
right.
movement fragment. That's what happened in the case of Garvey. See, once they removed Garvey, the whole movement splintered because it was just built around Garvey. So that brother, Carlos Cooks, he was feeding Malcolm a lot of information, you know, because the Malcolm we saw at his death was not the same Malcolm that was in the Nation of Islam. He was transitioning psychologically, you see? He was in a, I remember they were talking about the wheel and all of this stuff, you know? but he was transitioning because it was the nationalists, the real Orthodox nationalists that you don't hear about, that was feeding Malcolm the information.
Now,
I want to ask the elder something, because the elder been around a long time.
One of the main people who feeded Malcolm information was Dr. John Henry Clark, especially historical information. He'll prepare him for many of the presentations or debates that he was going to be involved in. So, no, it wasn't the Nation of Islam. It's those who are outside of that. Because the Nation of Islam's mysticism, you can say that, you know, was not the proper thing for you to debate on, because you don't have a founder. You don't have no historical information. See?
Here's what I wonder, Oshie. I wonder if Malcolm had lived at this time, would he have even kept the last name Shabazz? Because when you look at that whole narrative from the Nation of Islam and Elijah Muhammad, there has never existed a tribe called Shabazz in Africa, Arabia, or anywhere except India. The name Shabazz is a word that originates from Persia, India. And so there's so much of what was the Nation of Islam that I think pretty much, I don't know if anything within it that you could use if you, it's something that I kind of just wish, and it's wishful thinking on my part, but would just go away. Because I don't see the validity that they're offering just talking black, but they don't have any program or any vision that, you know, for us to latch on to.
Which is interesting, which is interesting, Brother Muhammad, because when we were coming up, even before, like I said, you didn't get into the Nation until 71. But when you looked at the 60s and even prior, they had businesses. They had stores. They had that right on what is now King Drive, used to be Green Bay. They had a number of stores and restaurants and so forth. And, of course, in Chicago, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they had the Salam. That went all the way down. You know, they had all these other businesses.
When you talk about institutions, a real institution has the infrastructure and the foundation
to sustain itself,
to survive and continue.
Yes, that's right.
There was something about it that did not allow that. And it's mainly because it became Elijah Muhammad's personal cash cow, him, his family, and the high officials. It was not it was never really designed to do what it was promising.
Right.
Otherwise, you can't find a clinic, let alone them talking about building hospitals. You can't find a clinic that stems from the time of Elijah Muhammad to Farrakhan to this day. It was about Elijah Muhammad, and that's what cults are.
Yeah.
Now, you know, compared to, say, Mormons, look how mainstream and sustaining the Mormon cult became.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nation of Islam. It you know, I really just, I don't even see what the validity of it is today, because they're still talking the same thing, but saying, talk, how they used to say in the 60s, talking loud
ain't saying nothing.
But I want to ask the elder the question. I want to get my question after the elder. Elder, do you think that black people need leadership, or do we need drivership? What is your opinion from you assessing, looking at the whole movement over your lifetime? Do you think we need leadership, or do you think we have to get behind our people and push them forward? What is your thoughts?
That example of leadership that you just described is what I heard back in the late 70s, someone said that the term imam or leader is not somebody who gets out front and rises like some star. It's someone who gets behind the people and motivates, pushes them forward in the direction that's in their best interest.
And that's what we need. You know,
I agree with that definition that you espoused just then.
Right on, Brother Marcus. Because I've often said that, you know, we don't need a charismatic leader. You've seen what has happened to charismatic leaders. They're in, out front.
That era is over.
Yeah.
And I say now, with because a lot of what we look to, there's a guy, Oshi, I don't know if this is, I hope this is too much of a diversion. There's a guy on YouTube you can see now. His name is Pastor Geno Jennings.
Yeah.
And he kind of stands out as in black religion, black preachers, mm-hmm. in terms of the things that he calls to. But then when you watch him for a while, it's too much entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've said recently, and someone took offense to it and suggested that I was saying that entertainers don't have a role. But I'm not looking to be liberated by entertainers.
That's right.
I distinguish between Patrice Lumumba and Luther Vandross.
That's good with Muhammad. you can definitely distinguish that. That's not a, you know what, that's not a like a Red Fox when he said, I know the difference between Raquel Welch and Shirley Chisholm.
Absolutely.
But I've often said that we need a cadre of leadership and a charismatic
question.
Right.
You and I are going to drive from Milwaukee to Atlanta or from Atlanta to Milwaukee. We want to be on a court.
That's right.
Only one of us can drive at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that if I'm sitting to your right or behind you and I happen to see something that you could miss, I should be able to suggest it to you or point it out to you.
That's right.
You just don't need the kind of leadership that we used to see depicted wrongly depicted by the Caucasian Western movies with respect to Native Americans. Was they would come out and there would be a chief, and when they every time they knock off a chief, they got to go back and regroup.
Mm.
So we the definition of leadership. And coming to an agreement on that is one that I think is very much needed, but mm-hmm. it's not the kind of charismatic leadership that we that at one time, we looked to and that motivated us, but didn't really move us in the direction that we needed to go, because at the end of the day, it has to come from inside.
Mm-hmm.
The motivation can't come all from outside. It has to. You have to plant seeds and nourish and fertilize them to come forward, and that's one of the definitions. But there are many definitions of leadership.
Sure. Well, that's why I'm saying that we need to look at the type of leadership that is a cadre of leadership with a charismatic program. So we have a spokesperson or spokespersons. You knock them off. We just turn the other page and we keep on going, because the program is what's important. And the strength of the cadre of leadership is what is important, whether it's men and women, definitely men and women, because we are in this together. So a sister can come to the fore, and do that kind of work and be supported, should be. When me and you worked with NAACP, Chris Belnavis was the president.
Yeah.
I'm not sexist to say I don't support women leadership.
I have no problem with. See, there are some women. I believe in there are roles for men and women
mm-hmm.
that distinguish them. I can't have a baby.
That's right.
So there are certain things, but when it comes to leadership and intellect, women have as much to offer.
That's right. That's right.
And if you want to bring it home to anybody, okay, you have daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And you want the best for your daughters, just like your neighbor who may have sons.
Mm-hmm.
His son shouldn't be elevated over your daughter, or your daughters shouldn't be debased in the presence of his son. So there's a role for men and women equally in leadership. Character is what is most important, I think, when it comes to leadership is character.
That's right.
And one thing we can say about Malcolm had character.
That's right. He had integrity. Character. That's why I loved him, man. You know, when you brought out the fact when the FBI came to his home and he had the tape recorder under the couch and they tried to get him to turn over information against Elijah Muhammad and anything else, or to work with them, to be an informant for them, and he rejected them. He said, no, I'm not going to do this. He had integrity.
Yeah.
He had.
He said, you know more about the nation than I do.
Yeah, Mip.
Clearly, because they thoroughly infiltrated
it. Yeah.
They had thoroughly infiltrated the nation and were complicit in some of the ideas and ideology. J. Edgar Hoover infiltrated, I witnessed personally when I was a member in the 70s, putting information, false information out, sending mailings to ministers as though they came from Elijah Muhammad in Chicago, or putting lessons out that took the science fiction, the L. Ron Hubbard and Isaac Asimov fiction of Yaqub's history to a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just way out there to the point where it was like, wow, this is some absurd nonsense. But clearly, that hand was in there. So your character is there's no measure or no value you can put on character, because it's indispensable to success of any people.
That's why I have such an affinity and deep respect and admiration for Malik El Shabazz. 414-507. Good afternoon.
Hey, brother Oshie.
LaRouned.
What's How you up? Doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Oh, that's good. I think we need to, I'm focusing on the part where we're talking about leaders, but we also need teachers. And I think teachers are more important than leaders, because a teacher will give you the information you need, and then you can decide what to do.
But you know, and what? Do you know what, LaRue? Just that kind of harkens back to what brother Marcus was saying, and brother Muhammad's response is that the person behind who's pushing the people forward is a teacher. He's making sure that we're going into the right direction. A so-called leader, sometimes like his head is big or her head is big, and they're just out in front. They're the spokesperson. They become the issue. They become the thing. And we need people.
Do you know the teachers that we need really, really right now and before and in the future? Mothers and fathers.
I say.
That's true. Mothers and fathers.
Yeah.
Your best teachers before you set foot in a schoolhouse are your parents.
Mm-hmm.
The quality and the level of parents and responsibility of parenting is something that is so important that sometimes when we the movements and the efforts that we I think it has to be built in, like what you're saying about teachers. When you talk about leaders, you're talking about a teacher, as Oshie said.
Mm-hmm.
But fundamentally, whatever we are doing, you have to have teachers, parents in their role. Otherwise, what is the future? What is the future? We have to start thinking about the future. When you look at our community now, whoa, across the country.
And you know what? I see is a lot of people, they're following what other people are saying, and if they got a lot of charisma, then they'll just go along with the program. But we need teachers to teach us how to think for ourselves, and then we can make the right decisions. And that's why once the leader is killed, everything falls apart, because the people are followers, and they're not thinking. We're not thinking for ourselves. We're not analyzing the situation correctly. And that's why we're not getting the results we should be getting.
Those are some of the first words that I internalized, and it took me a while, because I came up in a home without a father. But when I heard, when I was 17 years old, Malcolm say, to some young people, I believe he was in Mississippi, the most important thing that I can think to tell you is to learn to think for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't learn to think for yourself, you'll find yourself loving your enemies and hating your friends. You'll be going north when you think you're going south, east when you think you're going west.
Mm-hmm.
That fundamental teaching is so, so important, because look at the condition of our young people when it comes to their appearance, their attitude, their values.
It's disgusting.
Have you ever put on a pair of pants and you either forgot your belt or you forget your belt? The feeling of having to constantly pull your pants up.
Man.
So imagine what it would take for somebody to get you to walk around like that on purpose. Exactly. That just gives you an idea how lost our young people are when it comes to leadership, or what they will turn to.
And Brother Muhammad,
who they will turn to.
I thought that shit would be played out. It's been going on now since the 80s. You got 50 year old motherfuckers walking around with their pants down.
It's outlasted the Jerry curl. Remember when we were just please don't Jerry curl, please go away. Milwaukee was one of the last places. I will say this. I was visiting my daughter, and maybe it's where she lives in Virginia, that I did not see somebody's underwear the whole time I was there. But yeah, to my brother's point, yeah, right now the leadership or the example that our young people follow is mostly found in the culture of gangster rap, rap. And I know this is going to offend some young people, but it's pretty much the conduit but where most of our people receive their direction.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, definitely we need better examples, but it goes right back to the home and who's teaching our young people.
Right.
Where are the mothers and fathers? And even if they're not together, there's a need for them to become engaged,
right?
And
rearing their children.
Hats off to the fatherhood programs,
right?
And the communities around the country that are trying to do that, because it's vitally important.
I say, 267. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Oshi.
Hey, Brother Ralph.
Hey, man, I'm enjoying this dialogue, man. It's a heck of a history lesson, and when he talked about the book, Black Incorporated. I have that book. I haven't read it in a while. But yeah, the Black Mafia was Black Mafia and the Nation of Islam. They were together on a lot of that stuff that was going on up here in Philadelphia. Now, what I wanted to say, I talk about my experience, and I briefly visited the Nation in the 80s. And you were right, that Brother Muhammad's correct. Man, they said they used to call, they wouldn't call him Malcolm X or anything like that. They would call him Malcolm Little, I think. And they said they would dig him up and shoot him again. And when I heard this, and I was in my 20s, and when I heard this, I said, like, man, something ain't right. But it made me look to Malcolm. And as I looked at Malcolm and seen the way that brother walked, and I agree with that brother that called from 323. I said that brother was not a messiah, but a prophet, because a lot of things he said was honest to God truth. And if we followed it, we'd be in a lot better situation than what we are today.
Yes.
Now, I do disagree with the previous caller, Brother LaRue, because I believe that a leader should also be a teacher. And you teach. But, because I know the brother you have on with you, you judge a tree by the fruit it bears. Now, the nation, I see nothing but dirty, rotten fruit dropping from it. Since I was in there, I've seen brothers slinging out of there, taking part in gang activity. And so that was dirty fruit to me. I'm here to, try to worship a higher power. And here y'all are just being accepted any old kind of way. So, and then the doctrine of the scientists creating the white man and we Asiatic and all this other garbage, man, all you got to do is just have some common sense and figure it out for yourself. Like you said, you got to think for yourself, man. but it's a heck of a history lesson. I love that brother, Brother Malcolm, man, because he's my example of what a black man should be.
I agree.
He's my example. All the other stuff.
He's the model.
He said, leave our religions in the closet.
That's right.
You know, that brother was right on point. So, you know, I just had to call in and said, I'm enjoying this conversation. It's a history lesson. It reminded me of my brief stint in the nation, which Harriet ran out of there because it was rotten fruit, man. Yeah. So, you know, I just had to call in and get my
I appreciate that. I'm glad you enjoyed that concert last night. Thank you so much, man.
Brother. The Soulistics. My God. But, all right, then, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brother Ralph. Peace to you. Right on, Brother Ralph. Yeah.
Can I say one more thing, man?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Brother Russ. Yes, sir.
For me, see, like, I agree with everybody else, man. Everybody on this line is a damn leader, man. And for what I look at, man, nobody got all the answers. So one minute I'm a teacher, next minute I'm a student. You got to vibrate like that, man.
Yeah, I agree.
That's how you roll like that, man. Mm-hmm.
Here's what a brother, he's originally from Philly. He's living over in London, England, someplace now, teaching over there. But he said, he quoted someone as saying that you are not a person of knowledge until you can learn from those who are above you in knowledge and those who are below you in knowledge. A real teacher learns as much and gets as much back from their students as they give. In fact, that's how you remain in that position until you pass on or pass the mantle on to someone else, is you continue to give selflessly to your students, and if what you give to them, you will get back. And a lot of what you think you know, you will realize through sharing and passing it on. So, yeah, that position of leadership and teacher goes hand in hand. And the student, what is the saying? When the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
I say.
Even if you by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Wes.
And smart. Yeah, I'm going to say this and let's move on. The smartest thing I heard somebody say, including me, is them three words, I don't know.
Absolutely.
Open you up to go look up shit. Well, anyway, I let somebody talk. I love y'all, man.
You too, Brother West.
You got to think now, man.
All right, brother.
We got them, though, man. Because like you say, like football, one person get taken out, next person step up, man.
That's right.
That's how I got to be now. All right.
All right, my brother. Peace to you. All right. Brother LaRue.
Anybody waiting in the week, Oshie?
Huh?
Anybody waiting in the wings?
Brother LaRue?
Yes, sir.
Did you want to? Go ahead, quickly.
There's a thin line between a teacher and a leader, I think. But the teacher, he will give you the information that you need as much as you can. But like you said about the student, that's the one who gets all the information and makes you got to be a good student. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And there are a number of teachers out here, and nobody, like Gil Scott said, nobody knows everything, but everybody knows a little something. And so that's what we got to do. We really got to learn how to, and that's what Malcolm taught me, is how to think for myself. And that's when he was in teacher mode.
Yeah.
And hey, when I went to college, man, I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. And when I went, I heard about Malcolm, but when I got into college, that's when I learned that Malcolm X was from Omaha, Nebraska. That floored me. That let me know that everything I had been learning was pretty much bogus, because how am I gonna be living in Omaha, Nebraska and not know that Malcolm X came from Omaha, Nebraska?
Mm-hmm.
Well, started out, then he came to Milwaukee.
That's right. Then he went to Lansing, Michigan.
When Alex Haley came out with the autobiography, I stopped going. I only went to two classes. I went to one was the history class. The other one was philosophy class. The rest of the time I spent reading the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Right on, LaRue. Appreciate you, brother. Yes, go ahead, Brother Muhammad.
Well, we're about to wrap up, Oshie.
Yeah.
I only want to say that
I wish nothing but peace, prayers, peace, and blessings on Malcolm and his late wife Betty and his children. They carried a heck of a weight after the trauma that they received. I mean, the trauma of watching, you know, those young girls and Betty watching their father be gunned down for no good reason. That's what frustrated me most about those brothers in Newark, New Jersey, was that they were so staunch, and but at no time were they willing to recognize the sanctity of life. There's a statement in the Quran that says that if you kill one person unjustly, it is as if you had killed all of humanity. And if you save one person from an unjust killing, it is as if you have saved the whole of humanity. And I just was flabbergasted that this many years, 50-something years later, they were staunchly stuck in that place, mm-hmm. of defending the murder, yeah. of that brother in front of his wife and children, just based on some words that he said.
Yeah,
that's just so sad and tragic. And the worst part of it, on top of it, is it was us killing us, and it's no different than the us killing us that goes on in our community every day.
Yeah.
It is confounding as I don't know what, when you see these killings in Milwaukee and St. Paul, Minnesota, and Indianapolis, Indiana, and St. Louis, and Philadelphia, and Detroit. What in the world is going on that we are so quick to kill each other? One of the things the brother said earlier that reminded me of this, we used to practice the martial arts when I was in the nation, and there were some brothers that were lethal. And I had a friend named Yusuf from Cleveland, and he used to say this, and to this day, it cracks me up. He said, them brothers practicing all that karate, he said, they ain't gonna do nothing but whoop up on some poor innocent brother. I bet they ain't gonna go whoop no devil.
He's right.
You know, I encourage our people to go to the suburbs, but why in the hell are you killing people that look just like you? That is as phenomenal a question as I saw last night. It is one of my favorite quotes by Malcolm. He said, how did so few white people come to rule over so many black people?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question we should want the answer to.
Right.
And it rings today. Why are we so quick today to kill each other?
Because, mm-hmm. you know, we my little lie, you know, we'll kill each other at the drop of a hat or for a hat or because the hat has turned, yeah. a different way, you know? That's how pathetic it is.
For a look, Oshi.
Yeah.
For a look, we kill each other.
Yeah, looking at somebody say. And now, because of the proliferations of guns within the society, before, man, okay, you know, I mean, just like when I went to from Seaford Elementary School to McKinley, my first damn day there, this cat wanted to fight me because he allegedly I tried to steal his girlfriend. You know, the first day. I had to fight cats,
Oshi,
man.
You had that quote unquote. I'm gonna say it the way. The reason why that happened to you, Oshi, I know a guy. I've known him for years, since the '60s. He has a master's degree, but this is how he would describe you or myself. Oshi Muhammad, you know, tall, light skinned, curly hair, good looking nigga. What? But that's where a lot of that self-hatred comes from.
Yes.
I hate myself because I look African, and I hate you because you don't look African.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not a quagmire, I don't know what is.
Yeah. And to me, that's the crux of our problem, is that we haven't, and I guess that's why I embraced Malcolm, because he embraced being African. He was a pan-Africanist. He was not an assimilationist. He was not an integrationist. He understood, even that's why I have some issues with Spike Lee and his characterization of Malcolm. Because even after he came on, even after he went on Hajj and he did what he did and he came back, he was still in that mindset. He was still in that frame that, no, these sons of bitches ain't no good for us. And to try to integrate is just like us trying to rearrange the chairs on the Titanic, the deck chairs on the Titanic. This damn thing is going down. Just as Martin said towards the end about to Harry Belafonte, I believe I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building. It's going to go down. Yep. Our faith.
Integration destroyed our community.
Yes. Yes. And today,
and if you doubt it, drive through your community, drive through any African American community, and start counting the number of business enterprises that you see. I'm not saying there are none, but most of those that are there that still exist, these are individuals that almost are leeches, bloodsuckers off the majority of us, and have no intention of incorporating the masses or bringing along any, maybe their son, and if their son, then well, it'll die with me,
mm-hmm.
which is very, very tragic. But yeah, it destroyed our community because it caused those who were examples or teachers on all stratas to abandon the community, so that the next generations after us, Oshi, to this day, mostly grow up not seeing teachers, police officers,
right.
doctors, lawyers,
right.
living in the community, in their community next to them. What do they have to aspire to but a drug dealer or a rapper?
Mm-hmm.
That's the tragedy of the assassination of Malcolm to this day.
That's right. Well, Brother Muhammad, I really appreciate this. I'm going to play the eulogy that Brother Ozzie Davis gave towards the end here. And then we're going to close out this program. Where is my program at, man? My computer's acting funny again, man. That happens that way sometimes. You know, so, but once again, I appreciate you, dear brother.
Yes, sir. Always, Oshi.
Always. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Okay. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivore means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. We will be victorious, family. Peace.